Good morning. My name is Melanie C., recovered compulsive overeater and host for the Sunday Special Edition. Welcome to you all. Today is Sunday, May 14, 2014. The share IDs for Friday, May 12, 2017, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 9933. And for our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the share ID number is 9936. On Sundays, we gather in one place to enjoy the miracles of recovery by studying. Studying that we do during the week is placed to the side only for a single demonstration of the transformed lives of the storyteller, panelist, or teacher that we will enjoy today. We enjoy in real life as we listen to the promises of recovery. A Vision for You Today presents a new freedom, a personal story. From the depths of this disease to now living happy, joyous, and free, our fellow visionary will take you on a spiritual journey. How far will this disease go to take me down? Is it the same for everyone? What will it be that will take to shovel me out of this deal? Will I have that shovel put away only to steal it back again from another? Determining the depth of this disease is an elusive thing. You might recognize this line. Surely I don't have to go as far as some of you fellows did. You know, for me personally, because I really wanted to change. Well, that may just happen for some of you. And some of us will have lost it all, yet still have a bright idea for stopping come morning. Disease has no mercy. And as predictable as it can be, there is no thinking our way out of this. But just try and stand by and watch a fellow fully recover from the depth of their eyes, that's the death within it, and confusion coming from their lips, to being fully released from food obsession. This is a promise on page 133, to be happy, joyous, and free. Any and all will be stunned and amazed. Life is good. Today we will hear just such a story from one of our very own. She is living a program of attraction. Her genuine loyalty of service at A Vision for You is so appreciated. It's just so beautiful to watch a life being fulfilled within her. This speak book is being affirmed again and again. Follow along, because we are going to pick up from her story what is promised to each of us when we surrender it all to the 12 steps program that's outlined in the big book. Listen for the steps. Listen for the promises. This story is not a mystery. It is a miracle of recovery. Please help me welcome to the line this morning, Maura Z.
Good morning, Melanie C., and thank you for that very generous introduction. My name is Maura Z. I am a very gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. And I think I have to start with a little bit of humility and honesty and reality this morning. I was panic-stricken this morning, and thank God I have the steps, and I could call a fellow, and I could do a 10th step and learn a little bit more about myself and the fact that I had yet again fallen into the pit of self-reliance as opposed to God-reliance, and was able to turn it around and know that whatever it is I'm going to say for the next 35 minutes or so is going to be what God plans. And I have no control. I am very blessed this morning and very honored to have been asked. So I will tell you that I have written some notes, and I will follow along, excuse me. I hope to just be able to share some of my experience, strength, and hope. And I hope that if only one person hears something that helps them to put down the food and to pick up the big book than I have done God's work this morning. So basically, I had a pretty happy childhood, actually. I was very grateful. And, excuse me, I am actually going to start my timer because otherwise I might just ramble on. And so I'm just going to give myself 30 minutes, and hopefully I will actually speak for 30 minutes. I can tend to speak quickly, although not as quickly as I used to. But anyway, so as I was saying, I had a very happy childhood and a pretty much typical adolescence, the usual self-loathing, feeling less than, and time to time wishing I wasn't. It was hard. Going through puberty when your mom is going through menopause is not a very happy condition. But I lived through it. So did my mom. Came out with some battle scars. Pretty much my weight had been normal growing up. We played outside on the street. We didn't have smartphones and video games and such. So we were outside. We were running. And I was a very active kid. One of our favorite family pastimes, however, was, and I am one of four girls, was competing amongst my sisters with, you know, who could eat more than daddy, depending upon the food. And so adolescence was not very happy for me. And as I said, there were battles royale with me and my mom. I was absolutely blessed to be able to go away to college and went to actually live with my oldest sister. Stayed with her for the first semester because we didn't quite figure out how to work the dormitory situation when I first went away to school. She became basically my best binge buddy. But I was a happier person in college, and my mood and my self-esteem seemed to improve. I was obviously happy to be out of my parents' house and away from mom. But even though I was a great student all through school and high school and had very good grades, I kind of became quite the slug in college. I became very relaxed. I made friends. And I spent a lot of time getting stoned and sleeping around and skipping classes and dieted. I have no idea why, except to say that all my roommates, all the popular girls, they were all preoccupied with losing weight. And it was weird because they didn't look to me like they needed to lose weight. Pictures of me that I was rummaging through the other day, from that time, I didn't look like I needed to be losing weight. But there I was. And unfortunately, the dieting actually caused me to gain weight. And I went from about 115 to about 140. And I'm only 5 feet tall. So it was not fun from an eating standpoint. It really started to get going. But after 4 years and a whopping .196 GPA, I left school. I left college and got a job. And then was married 2 years later. The marriage was not great. And, you know, the first few years were good, but it turned into a very emotionally abusive marriage, which kept me eating, which, of course, kept me getting bigger, which only, you know, irritated him more. And so intimate-wise, that had fallen off, and I was rebuffed many, many times. And that was hard to live with. So I tried all kinds of diets. I was the queen of infomercials. Oh, my gosh. all of them, and I won't name names because that's an outside issue, but I bought probably $700 worth of diets. And some of them I actually opened and used, and some were put in the trash, not even having been opened. And that was pretty much my life. And then in 1993, the bottom fell out. And I'm going to try to get through this without crying, but please bear with me. My younger sister was killed in a car crash on Christmas Eve, and she was 30 years old. She had just turned 30, and she had just celebrated 3 years clean and sober. I was obviously grief-stricken. I was in shock, and I was freaking pissed off at God because it made no sense. My mom was in hospice, for crying out loud. Why would you take a healthy 30-year-old when my mom is dying and suffering in hospice? So I can clearly remember sitting on my sister's living room floor, screaming at the top of my lungs, staring up, and telling him that you took the wrong one, you son of a bitch. I was pissed. I was angry for so long. Mary, pretty ironic that she died on Christmas Eve. And by the way, did I mention I'm Jewish? So yeah, that was kind of weird. But Mary was the only one of my three sisters that ever really showed me any consistent kindness and love. She actually interceded on my behalf when my older sister Sherry's bullying became more out of line than usual. And of course, I didn't realize this until later, but it was all about me and my pain and hurt and fear. It was, you know, how dare you take Mary from me? I needed her for what she could do for me. How selfish. Oh, my gosh. So the pain subsides a little bit here and there, but the anger never subsided. I wore that anger like a badge of honor, and it all but consumed me. Of course, I only knew one way to handle all those painful feelings and what I considered to be very righteous anger. And so I buried my face in a bag of people chow and pretty much never came up for air. I did work some diets from time to time, and I lost some, and I'd stopped dieting, and I'd gained more back. 3 weeks after my sister Mary's death, my older sisters, who had decided not to tell my mom, finally decided to tell my mom. And so 26 days after Mary was taken, mom finally let go and passed. So 2.5 years prior to that, I'd lost my father. So within 3 years, half of my family was gone. And for the next 7 years, I was pretty much a zombie. Life was not life. It was not living. It was a miserable existence. And I moved through the days, painful days, one day at a time. No true happiness. Occasional, you know, periods of being glad or, you know, lighthearted or what have you, but anger robbed me of all my joy. And somehow I decided I needed to change. I needed to stop being a spectator in my own life. I needed to start being a participant again. How long could I possibly sit in this? My ego, of course, wanted me to sit in it for the rest of my life, face down in the food. But I knew I had to change. And so I decided, of all things, to go back to college because after 4 years and a 0.196 GPA, I didn't have a degree. So I took my, I don't know how many legitimate credits, and I went over to Marymount University and I met with the dean and we worked out a plan. And it was going to take me 2.5 years to graduate. And it was a long time to think it was going to take me that long. But I was working full time. So I was only going to be able to take one or two classes every semester. And during my time in school, I was working on a liberal arts degree, and it was going to be basically two areas of concentration, one in psychology and one in business. So that's where most of my legitimate credits were in. And there was a class called The Psychology of Addiction. And I signed up for it because I wanted to understand Mary's life in and out of recovery, because I never really got it, never really understood it. Because by all outward appearances, she was doing great. She had a job, you know, she had a car, she was living her life, you know. So she got, you know, drunk on weekends and she partied and stuff, you know, okay. All young people do that. I didn't see it. I didn't see that it was being taken to the extreme, and I also didn't see that she was popping narcotic pain pills. And she actually worked for a doctor's office, so unfortunately she had access to them, and he kept writing scripts, and I never did understand that after the fact. But anyway, so the syllabus actually included a section on eating disorders, and that's where God stepped in. And the text actually referred to Overeaters Anonymous and included the 12 steps. So I saw some things that I related to, but I wasn't convinced. But I did decide to do my term paper on compulsive overeating. And on April 4th, 1999, which turned out to be Easter Sunday, another irony, I went to the 10:30 newcomers meeting, which preceded their 11th step meeting. And it was at Fairfax Hospital. And I had a little bit of trouble getting to that meeting because that was the same hospital and possibly the same room, meeting room, that my sister and I had attended the family classes for the in-treatment patients for the, you know, alcoholic and drug treatment center that my sister had checked into when she was 12-stepped. And so that was kind of weird, but it was also the hospital that Mary had died in. And so I went because I had to do this leap in term paper, but it was with a heavy heart. I remember when I was walking into the building, there was a bunch of people outside smoking, and they were waiting to go into an AA meeting or whatever, some kind of meeting. I think it was AA. So was that odd, or was it God stepping in again? I sat at that newcomer meeting and I listened to a woman I didn't know, never met before, while she told my story. And I cried for 30 minutes. I couldn't believe I was the only one who did. I wasn't the only one who did what I did with food. I'd eaten frozen food. We didn't have microwaves back in the day. Yes, I'm old. Eating out of trash cans, eating from other people's plates, eating until I couldn't breathe. Eating until I couldn't breathe. I would get up, go and change out of my jeans and put on sweatpants and continued eating. I sat alone in the dark after my husband went to bed because he worked at the post office. And so he was getting up at like, I don't know, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. So he was going to bed at like 8 o'clock. So I sat there. And you know, with my bags and my boxes in the dark watching TV, and a lot of times just numb. I would wake up the next morning and see the trash that I had emptied a box of this or I'd emptied a bag of that, and not even be able to recall, excuse me, having eaten it, having finished it. I knew I had eaten it, but I didn't realize I had finished it. And I don't know, maybe some of you can relate to that experience. I also couldn't believe that someone else felt as badly about herself as I did. She shared openly with me. I mean, intimate details of her life, and she was a complete stranger. She didn't know me. So we went then to the 11-step meeting, and eye-opening is an understatement. and I continued my crying for another hour and a half. They asked me, I guess I might have been one of the only newcomers that day, so they asked me if I wanted to read, and they handed me the AA 12 and 12 and asked me to read the 11th step prayer. And it's on page 99, by the way. I could barely get through it. I was raw, and it really spoke to me. And so that's when my new life was about to begin, and though I didn't know it then, and then God, you know, steps in again. I have been in OA since 99, so it's about 17, 18 years. And I've had many periods of what I thought was abstinence over the first 14 years. I believed that as long as I had more days abstinent than not, that I was living in recovery and life was pretty good. Except I wasn't, and it wasn't. I had read the big book many times. In fact, I was required to read the doctor's opinion every time I succumbed to the disease and picked up. So, I don't know, I probably read it 15 times and answered questions. But I'd read it. I never studied it. And after, you know, 14 years, I became very disillusioned with the OA program and the way I was working it, and I began thinking about leaving OA. And that just scared the poo out of me. I mean, what the heck could I possibly do? What would happen in my life if I left OA? I mean, it was chilling. It was chilling. So even though it wasn't necessarily perhaps working for me and I wasn't where I wanted to be, it was a hell of a lot better than where I had been before. And I wasn't willing to trade that. So I kept coming back. And but as I said, I became very disillusioned. Because for me, just for me, OA had become a 9-2 program of abstinence and not a 12-step program of recovery. I hated life abstinent. I didn't realize why, but I was white knuckling it all the time. And all my energy was focused on food, not eating, not picking up. It was all I could think about. When was I going to get my next fix? Or when was I not going to get it? And when was I going to just be able to breathe? But I was so desperately terrified of losing my abstinence and, you know, my white-knuckled abstinence, as they say. The obsession of the food at that time did actually become worse than before, because before, it wasn't necessarily that I obsessed about the food all day long. It was just kind of an undercurrent that I knew I was going to eat. I knew what I was going to eat. I was planning my food, you know, and so on and so forth. But it was the norm. It was my normal. It was my truth at the time. But being abstinent was worse for me. So after 14 years in OA, when I was finally blessed to find someone in whom the problem had been solved, my eyes were opened. It was as if I had been blind and all of a sudden I could see. I have an allergy of the body that compels me to continue eating. And should I be able to stop for a time? A strange mental blank spot that won't let me stay stopped. This was revolutionary to me, and I had to admit that it was my truth. No wonder I could never stay abstinent, because I had continued ingesting my alcoholic foods and ingredients. There's no way I was going to be able to stay abstinent. So I worked the steps as I had never before. and a very subtle, imperceptible change occurred in me. That's the word, imperceptible. I realized I was not thinking about food at all. I have no idea when it happened. I just realized one day that the obsession had been lifted. And I acknowledged the gift of being recovered in August of 2013. And all I could think was, holy cow, Batman, how did that happen? I was finally free. It was a completely different way of living. I realized I wasn't reacting to life as much, that I was living life, and I was participating at last. I was actually participating, no longer the spectator. And I started to know what life was like to live as a compulsive overeater in a state of recovery, being recovered compulsive overeater. And life was fabulous. Right? Sure, life was great. I'm recovered. Everything's wonderful. I'm going and doing, I'm keeping busy. Not so much. Because my 10 steps had become fewer and farther between. And my 11 steps were non-existent. So, now if you want to get out your big books, I've got some quotes for you. And some of these I've kind of tweaked a little bit to make sense for my life. So on page 35, let's do that again. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. Page 36. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind that I could have no added sugar frozen yogurt. Back on 36, I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but I felt reassured as there was no added sugar. 36 again. That didn't seem to bother me. So one time a week became twice a week, became four times a week. And then I decided I could add sugar-free cookies back into my food plan since there's no sugar in them. So because there's no sugar, I'm still obstinate. Funny thing, though. I wasn't sharing any of this little experiment with my sponsor. I didn't need to because I was recovered. She trusted me. So there I am in August 2014, a year later, on vacation, having a fabulous time, and still believing I was abstinent. But instead of counting out three sugar-free cookies for one serving, I grabbed the bag. And the three cookies per serving became one bag per serving. And I wasn't surprised. How could I be? I knew that as soon as I picked up that bag, it would be empty when I was done. So I called my sponsor immediately. Well, actually, immediately to an active addict was actually the next day. Because at that point, I was living in my disease again. From the point I first picked up that no sugar added frozen yogurt, I had succumbed to my disease, and I was in denial. And that started back in, I think, maybe April, and it took me until August to jump out of the river of denial. I had succumbed again to this disease. But this time, it helped me to make a significant reduction to my ego. And since then, I've worked these 12 steps every day. I rarely have a day without a 10th step. In fact, this morning, 30 minutes before I was to check in on the line, I was panic-stricken. And I called a fellow and I said, I have to do a 10th step now. because I was afraid of speaking on the line. I was comparing myself to all the speakers I'd ever heard. I was not as dramatic, or I was too dramatic. I was going to be stumbling over my words. I was going to not be able to answer the questions they would have for me. I mean, everything negative. And, of course, doing the 10th step, I realized what it was I was afraid of. And I realized I had again slipped into self-reliance and had let go of God and was not relying on God. And so what would God have me be? God would have me be patient with myself and loving and accepting of his help and being in faith and turning it over to him and realizing that whatever I say was what I was meant to say, because they're God's words. Because before I share at any time, I say the third step prayer so that I can remind myself that it's God's words and God's message, and I am only a messenger. And so I was able to do some deep breathing and pick up the phone and dial in. And I'll tell you, doing 10 steps, what an amazing way to let go of a fear or a resentment in a matter of minutes. Instead of taking up space in my head rent-free for, 3 hours or a day or a week. It was a great lesson in humility. It was a great lesson in humility. I learned I do not have control over any part of my life, or yours for that matter. I am not Miss OA. I am not all that in a bag of chips. I am, gratefully, a recovered compulsive overeater for today and only today. When I start living in a future that isn't here yet, like freaking out about what's going to happen when I speak at the meeting, I have to remind myself, it's just Sunday. It's just Sunday, Maura. In other words, take it one day at a time. Stop living in the future. And that is something I say a lot. And in fact, I say it a lot to my sponsees. I had no idea how to live in this world with or without food before I found the rooms of OA. I had no clue. When I succumbed to the desire again in August 2014, I was terrified. How could I have let slip the gift that I had been given? The answer was easy. I had stopped aligning my will with God's. Thankfully, I don't have to be perfect, and I kept coming back. I have never left the rooms of OA. I work the steps way more carefully these days and thoroughly. But, I had been convinced years before, many times before, that I'd also worked the steps as best as I could. But I am like that proverbial onion we hear tell of. And God lets me know when it's time to peel another layer. And I have no idea there's a whole lot more layers to get peeled. One thing I have come to learn and believe is that relapse is not inevitable. So back to the big book, if you want to join me on page 85. Flipping pages. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. I am so blessed to live free from anger, page 66. Free from the bondage of self, page 63. Freedom from self-will, page 87. Freedom from compulsive overeating, free from self-loathing, free from feeling less than, free from perfectionism, oh my gosh. Free from needing to be right, free from needing you to like me. And of course, I know a new freedom and a new happiness. Recently, I've been blessed with reuniting my sisters after 2 years of estrangement. My sister Mary taught me a lesson in humility and forgiveness, and I was able to accept my sisters back into my life. Another miracle. And I completely believe in my heart that my sister Mary 12th stepped me into the rooms from heaven. I believe that. Otherwise, I don't think I would have taken that class. And I've been blessed to receive many of the promises in the big book. The promises from step 1 on page 8. The promises from step 3 on page 63. The promises for step 4 on page 70. The promises for step 5 on page 75. And of course, the 9th step promises on page 83. I wrote these notes on my return from my second trip to World Service Business Conference as a delegate from the Tidewater Intergroup in Virginia in Region 7. And this is a level of service I never dreamed I would be able to do or have the opportunity to do. As long as I continue to work the 12 steps, to the very best of my ability, one day at a time, I will give service. Page 89. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. At my first meeting in April 1999, I heard something that spoke straight to the hole I had tried to fill with food. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome home. And with that, I pass. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you so much, Maura. You shared so much of your story and your life with us today, and so appreciate that. What a touching story of what the promises really do deliver, applied, that are from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We'll ask Maura to leave her contact information at the conclusion of this recording, so please stand by for that. But for now, we'll open up the lines to those that might have questions today for Maura. Press star 1 in order to be able to be heard, and we can gather your questions for her. Who would like to ask a question of Maura?
Lisa B.
Hi, Lisa B. Good morning.
Good morning. Anne Marie M. in South Carolina.
Good morning again, Anne Marie M. Thank you. Anybody else?
Kathy K.
Hi, Kathy K. I got you too. Thanks. That sounds like a great lineup. Good morning, Lisa B. What would be your question for Maura?
Good morning. This is Lisa B., a recovered compulsive overeater in Greenville, South Carolina. Thank you, Melanie, for your service. Thank you, Maura Z. Your share was beautiful. Thank you for being so generous with yourself and giving so much of yourself and your honesty. And you said something that just really perked my ears up. You said, and I think it's so important, you said relapse is not inevitable. I think that's what you said. And I would love if you could elaborate on that, please.
Oh, Lisa. Oh, when I was first coming through OA, I would hear people talk about, that they knew that there was another relapse in their future, but they didn't know if they were going to come back from it. And they said it with such certainty. And that scared me. And I did not want to have that be my truth. But unfortunately, for many years, it was. I believe it's not inevitable, because I believe if we work the steps as they're written in the Big Book, in the order that they're written, if we study it with someone in whom the problem has been solved, and we do it, and we do it, we do the work. And as long as I'm maintaining my spiritual fitness one day at a time, I do not believe relapse is inevitable. Is it possible? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But it does not have to be a fait accompli. It does not. It is my wish, my prayer, and I work the steps every day to ensure that it doesn't happen. And I'm going to probably misquote this, but I believe it was Dr. Bob who said basically that working with the newcomers is that much more, a little bit more insurance of his staying sober that day. And I'm always working with newcomers. I love working with newcomers. And that is, it's a little bit of insurance. So if I'm working my steps, if I'm working with newcomers, if I'm doing service, if I'm growing and enlarging my spiritual fitness on a daily basis, I don't believe it's inevitable. And I say that for myself. I can't say that for anyone else. And I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Lisa B. Anne Marie M., your question, please.
Good morning, and yes, thank you, Melanie, for your service, and Laura for sharing your story. How do you think the obsession was removed from you? I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that, how it was actually removed, the obsession of the mind. Thank you.
The how of it? I did my part. I worked the steps. As my hair was on fire, as someone has said, I put down the food completely. I was entirely abstinent. That was the very first thing. That's, you know, step zero. I was entirely abstinent. I went through my food with a magnifying glass and something I had not done before. I had never really identified what my binge foods were, never identified what my binge ingredients were. So I got really clean with that, and I dug deep. I mean, I looked at, okay, when I go to Aunt Mary's, what's my most favorite thing I look forward to doing? You know, what is it? It's going to be eating her, I don't know. I have no idea. Fill in the blank. When I go bowling, what do I look forward to? Why do I go to Arts and Crafts Fairs? Well, because they got funnel cakes. Who the hell wouldn't go? You know, so I had to look at not only foods, but I had to look at situations to spark my memory so that I could remember what it was, what was the focus for my going and doing that activity. And 9 times out of 10, it was because there was a specific food I was going to be able to get. So that was part of it. I had to absolutely start clean, had to be entirely abstinent. And that way I was finally, you know, as it says in the Big Book, a man's brain must be cleared. And so in order to, for me to work the steps truthfully, honestly, thoroughly, I had to get clean first. And once I got clean and started working these steps, it just, you know, God took care of the rest. I do my footwork, and I leave the results to God. I didn't have it in my mind to focus on, I have to get clear of the obsession. I have to get clear of the obsession. I focused on doing the steps and doing the work. That was my job. and the results were going to be up to God. And if I did my work honestly and thoroughly, and what I tell my sponsees now is if you do your work honestly and thoroughly, then you too will have the obsession lifted. It says it in the big book. And it was. So that's the how of it for me. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. Kathy Kay, your question, please.
Thank you, Melanie, for your service, and thank you, Maura. It was really an honor to listen to you and your story. You've answered this in several ways, but I wonder if you could be more specific about how you work the steps daily. If you could just pick out a typical day and tell us, what does it mean to you to work the steps today? Thank you.
Thank you for that question, I think. Okay. You guys, you're a tough crowd. How do I work the steps daily? Well, all right, hang on a second now. My two little brain cells are twirling about. I take step one every day. Every day. I know that I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable. I do pray every day. So I, by virtue of that, I've taken step two. I turn my life and my will over to the care of God every day. That's step three. And by doing 10 steps, and there's pretty much not a day that goes by that I don't do a 10 step. So when I do a 10 step, I'm doing 4 through 9. I have to look at the whole thing. Now, some 10 steps I can just rattle off in a couple of, you know, minutes in my head. And okay, I get that. All right, this is what I did. This is what I'm doing. Okay, fine, you know, and it's done. Sometimes I have to call somebody and, you know, put the picture of the fourth step sheet in my brain and work it from left to right. And by doing that, working it with another, I'm better able to go through clearly if it's a troublesome resentment or fear and identify, you know, what was my part? That's key. When it comes to resentments, what was my part is key. When it comes to fears, it's key for me to know that relying on myself is useless. It's a waste of time, a waste of energy. And I will find no peace if I go down that road. So that's 4 through 9 and 10. 11th is my prayer every day. I do a review in the evening in my head. I used to write it down, but I do it in my head now. And if I've done a 10th step on something, but my little brain cells are still chewing on that thing, then I know I have not. I need to address it in my 11th step review. And I have to, you know, once again, pull out the sheets and go through it. Depending upon the hour, I may have to wait to speak to somebody the next day, or I call somebody on the West Coast. And I say, okay, you've got 3 hours earlier than me, so can you help me with this? I don't like to hold on to them. Holding on to fears and resentments scares me. And it's a healthy fear to have. And step 12, I'm doing step 12 now. Every time I give service, I'm doing step 12. And I work with newcomers all the time. I'm always taking somebody new through. I am blessed to say that I have taken I've taken 4 sponsees through, and they are now recovered, and they are sponsoring. So I think that's as best a way I can say how I'm working the 12 steps every day. I hope that answers your question. I hope that was enough specificity. If not, give me a call, Kathy.
Thanks, Mona. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Maura. Are there any other questions for Maura today?
Lorraine E.
Suchi.
Sad M.
I got Lorraine E. and Sue G. and Matt M. Anybody else?
Joanne L.
Gladys L.
Yes.
Joanne L. and Gladys F. And did I hear a Sandy?
Yes. Sandy, yes.
Okay. Sandy S. Okay, that looks like a good lineup. Let's go with those. Lorraine E., your question.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for your service, including those people on the line. I think that counts as service also. I've been out of the rooms for almost 30 years. Back again, listening to Vision for the last year or so. I really have a difficult time with the disease concept. It's probably self-will and ego, but it's just something that keeps me stumbling along, and I just really have a difficult time with the disease concept. Can you speak to that, please?
Thanks for the question, Lorraine. Well, my gut reaction is to say that if you don't want to think of it as a disease, how do you expect to recover from it? And I know that's turning the tables on you. You weren't expecting me to ask you a question back. Where are you in your steps, Lorraine, if I may?
Lorraine, do you want to press the one?
Sorry about that. I didn't realize it automatically muted me again. I've gone through a fourth and fifth step, working on my character defects, but I don't have a sponsor in OA. It's been difficult to find one for various reasons.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. Thank you. So for me, believing that it is a disease is paramount for my level of willingness, for my knowing the truth about myself, to realizing that I can't fix this. If this was a passing phase, then I wouldn't need Overeaters Anonymous. But I'm the real deal. I'm a compulsive overeater. And left to my own devices, I will be face down in the food, and I have no doubt that I will get to a larger size than I was when I came in. I'm drawing a complete blank on where in the big book I can tell you page-wise, but I know that in the doctor's opinion, the concept of this being a disease is spelled out. That I know for me, and that I know that what I've shared with my sponsees is, if I don't consider this a disease, then I'm not going to be wanting to do the work, because I have to get to a level of desperation. And if this is just a passing phase, or if this is something I'm going to be able to fix, you know, and just getting on a diet, then there is no level of desperation. If you've been in program for 30 years, are you abstinent today? Have you been able to maintain any length of abstinence?
No. The last couple of days I've picked up and I'm feeling frustrated, and I mean, I have no no reservations about accepting that I'm a compulsive overeater.
Okay.
And
why get hung up on the word disease?
Yes.
Because what I'm hearing is that, and bear with me here, but that's your disease telling you that it's not a disease. That's your ego. See, with me, my disease and my ego, they're BFFs.
Right.
When one says something that I don't buy into, the other one comes up with something that I will buy into. If you're not abstinent and you've been in the room for 30 years, what do you have to lose? You know, I mean, what I'll tell folks is, if you don't believe this is right for you, then it's not right for you. But if you're on the fence and you're not sure, and you're playing these head games with yourself, try it. Try it for a week. Try it for a month. If you don't like it, I promise you can have your old life back with all its misery, face down in the food, feelings of loneliness and despair. I promise. If you want that back, sweetheart, you can have it back. And I would love to talk with you more offline if you want to give me a call later.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lorraine E. Yeah, thanks, Maura. Sue G., question, please, for Maura.
Hi, Maura. Thank you so much for your wonderful share. I was wondering, since you were so angry at God, and it just showed in your tone of voice, even how angry you were. I'm wondering how you came out of that, and how you can see your relationship with God now. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue G. I appreciate that question. It was a process. It was a process. Over time, anger will dissipate or diminish. In my case, it diminished. It did not dissipate until I came into the rooms. And it didn't dissipate until I worked my fourth step. And it didn't dissipate until I worked my fifth step. I mean, you know, it diminished over time. It was hard for me to take my third step because he had let me down in the biggest way possible. And now I'm deciding to turn my will and my life over to him. That was hard. But I had to separate it out. And I had to engage my brain, all two brain cells, because I had to come to a point where I was going to say, okay, relying on myself and living in this, my sister Mary would say, I was living in my shit. And, you know, staying there wasn't helping me. And I so desperately wanted help. And I so desperately needed to change where I was that I was willing to give him another chance. Again, what did I have to lose? About 55 pounds. About a world's worth of anxiety and fear and shame, loneliness, despair. That's what I had to lose. What could it hurt? So I gave him a shot. And I had to look at some things in my life. Someone asked a question at a meeting a long time ago when I was living in California. They asked the audience, when in your life has God helped you before you gave him permission to do so? That has stuck with me ever since. Well, for me, the first answer was very quickly arrived. My father was a grand mal epileptic. And when he had a seizure, he would let out a very guttural, very loud scream that scared the poo out of a 9-year-old, okay? And I formed a fear, a phobia, if you will, of being alone with Daddy. What would I do if he had a seizure? I wouldn't be able to help him because I would be paralyzed with fear. Of course, those weren't the words that came to a 9-year-old, but you get the message. Well, I had to realize when he asked that question that I had never been alone with my father, that he'd had a seizure. Never. So who did that? It wasn't me. That was God. And I have had further instances where I know he has taken care of me. When I moved from California back to Virginia, I had to figure out what day to have the movers come pack my stuff up, what day to have the company come and pick up my car, what day to get my plane ticket for. I had to have all of that in place and be able to then arrive at my new condo. And how many days was I going to have a rental car? And all of those pieces, parts. I mean, you talk about something being dynamic and fluid. Well, so I flew out on January 4th, 2010. My car arrived on January 5th, so I paid one day of rental car. My household goods arrived on January 6th. I'm telling no lies here. So I was able to move into my condo on the 8th. And instead of paying for hotel rooms, one of my coworkers offered me the use of her over the garage apartment. And yes, it was okay that I brought my dog. There's nothing odd about that. That's got God written all over it. So as time goes on, I am told and I'm seeing and I'm hearing him taking care of me. So from there, it's easy for me to continue giving my life and my will over to him on a daily basis. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Suji. Matt M., your question.
Hello?
Hi, Matt. Your question, please.
Hi, Maura. Listen, I was in the food recently, up until recently, and I lost a really close primary relationship with a good friend that, because I was also a liar and a misnomer, and I was doing all these things that I really, it's not really who I am, but when I'm in the food, I'm a different person entirely. How do you deal with the self-loathing and frustration that comes with losing some close people in your life?
Thanks for the question, Matt, but don't go mute yet because I'm trying to understand your question. You're talking about losing close relationships because I hate myself?
Oh, I was in the food and I lost some close relationships because I was a liar and not telling the truth to people, and my friend didn't like lying. So how do you feel? After that happened, I felt such self-loathing and frustration and anger towards myself because I was in the food and it happened.
Okay, well, I don't have that experience. Except I can tell you that, yes, I have lost relationships. Definitely because I am a compulsive overeater. My husband was emotionally abusive to me, but I had my part. I gained an enormous amount of weight. I did not like myself. And so I wasn't very supportive of him in the marriage. And it ended in a divorce. Surprisingly, though, I was the one that went and started the divorce proceedings. So I lost the marriage, and I grieved over the marriage. And so that's the only significant relationship that I've lost when it comes to the food. Now, I certainly lost relationships with my two sisters, but that was not because of the food. That was because I was getting recovered, and I was working my program, and I learned that I needed to disconnect from toxic people, and I wasn't in a place of forgiveness. The only thing I can suggest is you've got to make a decision. You've got to, how do I say this? I don't know any other way to say this, but other, you got to shit or get off the pot. I had to decide, you know, was I sick and tired of being in the food? Was I sick and tired of playing around with the steps? And the answer was yes. So I'm sorry, I don't have the experience of I mean, even when I was in relapse, it was, I would have a week, I would have 2 weeks, and then I would go back. So I understand that routine. But I was lucky in that I didn't get into binges. I would pick up something stupid and then get right back on it. And that's a blessing. And I don't have any idea, you know, I had nothing to do with that. That was God. But when I would slip, or when I would succumb to the disease, because that's the proper word, it was one thing and then back on it. But I had to, regardless of volume or frequency, it's the same disease. It's how bad do you want it? And I heard somebody recently say it has nothing to do with willingness. Willingness is great, but doing it is the deal. I could be willing for 20 years, but unless I get off my butt and I do it, and I stop lying to myself, and I get real with myself, and I get back to the doctor's opinion every freaking time, and until you want it bad enough and need it bad enough and get to that level of desperation that no one else can give you, you're going to get stuck in that cycle. There's always hope, because you know that if you put down the food and you ask for help on a daily basis, on an hourly basis if need be, you can have this, but you got to do it. And I don't know if that answered your question at all, Matt, but I'm happy to talk offline.
Thank you, Maura. Thanks, Matt, for the question. Joanne L., you're next with your question.
Hi, this is Joanne L. from New Jersey. Thank you, Maura, very much for your story. I want to keep this short. I've been in program for many, many years and been through the steps many, many times. However, I have been, the disease has ruled me in the form of physical health and emotional health. And I find that when especially I'm in what, well, when I'm in one of those places, the emotions or the pain will overtake everything about working the program. Where I am now, is trying very hard to work the second part of the first step. And from your story, I heard a lot of pain through loss, et cetera. My question is, how do you work the program through immense amounts of pain? Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne, for the question. Working the program helped me to get through the pain. Um, I'm kind of weird in that through all my years in OA, I've always liked doing a fourth step. I know that's very bizarre. But I've always liked doing a fourth step because I knew there would be relief in giving it away in a fifth step. I have an aversion to pain because I live with physical pain every day. It's just part of my life. And so I want to get out of that painful situation as fast as I can. I'm not quite sure I understand. You said something about working through the second part of the first step. My experience with the first step is that all we're doing is making an admission. So there's no work to be done on step one. It's a decision step. So I make the decision that I am powerless over food. My life is unmanageable. There's nothing to work through. It's just admitting this is the fact of my life. So I don't know if you're getting hung up in something that is robbing you of precious time to get through the rest of the steps. The pain is there. It's not going to be relieved at step one. It will be relieved over time. As I said with me, it has diminished over time. And each step I do relieves more and more of the pain. Because each step I do brings me closer and closer to my higher power. I wasn't necessarily there until I got through or got to or started working on my ninth step amends. And so there's always pain. It's part of the human, you know, reality. I decided in step one, when I took step one, that I was just going to start here and move forward and leave the results to God. I can't do it. I never could. You know, I don't know the page that it's on, but it's, you know, A, B, and C, and it's, I'm going to paraphrase this horribly. Somebody in the big book, Thumper World, is going to cringe when I say this, but basically it's, I am powerless, and God has all power. And he will work in my life if he is sought. And I so totally butchered that. So please forgive me, everybody. If anybody wants to shout out and tell me what page that's on, I will be happy to correct it immediately. But basically, you know, that's how I've done it. That's what has worked for me. And I certainly hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Joanne L., for your question. Gladys F., you're next with a question.
Thank you, Maura.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. What's the speaker name again?
Maura.
Morris. Okay.
Maura.
I wanted to... Oh, Laura. Okay.
It's like Laura, but with an M. But go ahead.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Gladys.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. Well, my question is after you called your sponsor to talk to her about the cookie situations or whatever.
Yes.
If you went back to step one, I mean, not step one, the doctor's opinion. I have a two-part question. What exactly did you like? Was it something that you saw or looked at that maybe helped you with your abstinence? And then the other part...
Wait. Before you go into part two, I need to understand part one.
Okay.
Please.
You said you went back to the doctor's opinion, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, was it something in particular that you saw in the doctor's opinion that helped you to understand the allergy of the body and the disease more? That's the first question.
After I succumbed after the cookies and the frozen yogurt, and I called my sponsor, and I went back to, actually we went back to the title page. Was there something different that I saw? That I had taken my will back, that I had been living in denial, that I started to think I knew better than, you know, what my dietitian had told me to be eating. I thought I knew better, that, you know, I have arrived. I am recovered. I can do this. I'm cool. I'm neutral around the food, and this is not going to bother me. You know, there's a place in the big book. Hang on a second. You know, all was going fine for a while, right? Page 35. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind that I could have sugar-free frozen yogurt. I had failed to enlarge my spiritual life because I had failed to do 10 steps as often as was needed, and I had failed to do 11 steps. So, I mean, and I knew that piece before I had to go back to the doctor's opinion. I knew it. I knew that's what it was. So it was my ego that had been exerting itself, and I had to tell it to shut the bleep up and let me get back down to reality. I hope that answers your first question.
Yes, it did. And you tapped into the second part, too. But what I wanted to ask you about the 10th, 11th step, because that's where I started. You know, I guess ego tripping too, is what did you do to make it like easier for you to do 10 and 11? Because when I got to that point, I got overwhelmed with 10 and 11 and 12, basically. And I still feel that overwhelm. You know, my sponsor tell me now, you know, to do the 10th step, because I had like a build up of emotional that I wasn't doing the 10th step.
So what's got you overwhelmed? The build up of emotion or doing a 10th step?
I think doing the 10th step, because
so you like living with the emotions? You like living with the build up of emotions? The deal about doing 10 steps is this. The deal about doing 10 steps is this. And it's the same with whether or not you do the program or not. It's when the pain of being in the food is outweighed by the desire to get well, you will get well. But as long as the desire to live in the pain is greater, you're going to live in the pain. If you really want to get well and you really want to be relieved of that fear or resentment or whatever it is, that emotional buildup, then you're going to do something about it. If you really want to have that connection with God, if you really want to live in 10, 11, and 12, then you have to live in 10, 11, and 12. I was lying to myself. I was saying, yeah, I was living in 10, 11, and 12. No, you weren't, Zimmerman. You were doing 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And, you know, considering yourself having arrived. I don't mean to sound terse or flippant. It's just the reality of this disease in my life.
Right.
If I'm going to be namby-pamby about it, it's going to kick me from here to Sunday.
I understand exactly what you're saying, and I appreciate your story, because it you know, it helps me to see the truth about me, your story. So thank you for your honesty so much.
Thank you,
thank
for,
you
question,
for your question,
Gladys.
All right.
Yep, thank you very much. Sandy S., your question, please.
Hi.
Star one, Sandy S.? Oh, there you are. Good morning.
Hi.
Your question, please.
Hi, Sandy. Can you hear me?
Not very well. Are you on speaker or something? Or?
Let me just check. Hold on.
Okay. Traveling, maybe?
Traveling. I'm not on speaker.
Okay. Just speak louder or something. We can catch you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two questions. One, how have you, if you can give me a practical example, the most difficult thing for me is the overwhelming fear. Sometimes I don't even know what I'm afraid of, but I can feel this fear. You know, I've shared it before, and I'm on the fourth step, and I'm actually working on the fear part about asking God to remove the fear and what he would have me do. You know, I'd appreciate an example of that. I've had long-term abstinence, you know, by the grace of God. I have not felt happy, joyous, and free, and that's what I would love to feel. So the second part is, can you just...
Wait. Don't go to second part yet.
Okay.
I'm trying to... I got to understand the first question first there. Remember, I only got two active brain cells here, so we're working one at a time.
Great. If you could just discuss the most intense fear you've ever had and how you, the program, this step, how God removed it from you and directed your attention to something that was within his will. Does that make sense?
Yep. I don't know that I've ever rated my fears, Sandy. They're all just fears. So just working through my fourth step got rid of a lot of them. And then as they come up, working my tenth step. I'm not quite sure. I hear you're saying you're in your fourth step now. And how long have you been working on your fourth step?
About 9 days. I'm almost at the end. I'm going to be doing the fifth step on Tuesday.
Oh, good.
All I wanted to know is, I mean, this is what it's about for me. I know God made me abstinent, and I really question God. I mean, I'm willing to believe, but I'm looking for evidence. You know, when I came into OA, I saw people were abstinent. What I need to see now is that people have been relieved of fear, you know? And if you could just give one example in your life and you feel God has relieved you of fear. I know you gave the example this morning with the talk, and that was really good. I was just wondering if there are any other examples of you feeling the fear removed and the trust in God.
Did you hear my reference to doing a 10th step this morning about speaking this morning?
Yes.
That's the best one I can give you. That's the most recent.
Okay.
I can't think of one fear greater than another. As I'm able to turn them over, at that moment, that one fear is my greatest fear. So when I'm able to turn it over and do a 10th step and give it to God, and he relieves me of it, then that's my greatest fear at the moment, and it's been relieved by God. Okay, I hope that helps.
It did, and just one other question is just what is your concept of a higher power? Because I really think that's at the root of my difficulty with the fear is really trusting God. trusting that there is some higher power that's going to remove the fear and direct my attention. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you, I can tell you that real quickly, but then I really think we need to move on to see if there's somebody else that has a question. So my concept of a higher power is that he is pure energy. And I don't know if you're a Star Trek fan, but I picture the crystalline entity. And if you want to know more about that, call me offline. But God is pure energy, and it cannot be destroyed, and it cannot be created. So that's my impression. That's what God is for me.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Sandy. Yes. Thank you for your answer, Maura. Let's go with the last go-around of invitation for folks that would have a question for Maura. Are there any other questions out there before we close for the day?
This is Tara.
Hi, this is Carolee. I got a question.
Hi, Tara Kay. And did I hear who
Charles
else
is
here?
Sylvia. Sylvia also came in. I just had a quick question. Thank you.
Sylvia, and then I heard Charles, and then I heard Carolee. Anybody else? Well, that sounds like a good number to round out our day today. So I have Tara Kay, Sylvia L., Charles H., and Carolee D., I think. That is, if I remember correctly. Tara, go ahead with your question first.
Well, my question is actually what Maura requested was somebody to jump in and read or mention the quote that she was so beautifully putting into her words.
You are kind.
It's page 60, and it's the ABCs. You know, the A, that we were alcoholics.
Got you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Tara.
Yeah, I forgot my question, so go on with the others.
Well, then maybe
you
we can talk
question?
Back to yourself.
I can't remember it, so.
Oh.
Should have written it down. Having a senior moment. Happy Mother's Day, everyone.
We don't do this alone. We help each other. Thank you, Tara. Sylvia L., your question, please. Sylvia, star one, please.
Oh, sorry. I'm talking to myself. Thank you so much for that beautiful share. And I just wanted to ask you, how long did it take you to do step 9?
Oh, wow. Holy cow. I have no idea. Am I allowed to give that as an answer?
I stumped you, huh?
You did. Because here's the thing about working my program. You know, when I was first in program, I used to count days of abstinence. I don't count anything anymore. Mm-hmm. So I don't, and I'm a numbers person. So I'm used to counting everything. I'm used to measuring everything. I'm used to, you know, how many minutes, is, you know, and all of that. But when I was working with someone in whom this problem had been solved, I stopped counting. So it took me as long as it took. That's all I could say.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair enough because I'm going through my step 9 now. And it takes a lot of courage to do this. And so I was just wondering. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful day today.
Well, you too. But Sylvia, also, if you've taken step 8.
Yes.
You've made a list of all the persons you had harmed?
Yes.
And became willing to make amends?
Yes.
So in step 9, now we are going to act on that willingness.
Yes.
And all I can tell you is I don't know if you've made any of your 9 step amends yet.
Yes, I did.
But okay. So have they been positive experiences?
Yes, they have been, absolutely, huh?
Then you hang on to that, and that will propel you to do the rest of them.
Thank you so
each
much
amends
for that.
Each amends I made got me closer to God, because I knew that as I was making them and they were turning out okay, or they were turning out good, that he had been with me the whole time. And all that did was strengthen my trust and faith.
Very true. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Sylvia. Charles H., we're ready for your question.
Thank you. Thank you for your service this morning, Mara Z. I have a question. We all know that, you know, the numbers in OA is dwindling at an alarming rate. So my question to you is, other than the fact that newcomers are scared and they think they can't get in and all that stuff, do you believe that recovered people sometimes have a condescending spirit which drives newcomers away, which that's, you think that has a percentage of why OA is not thriving at the rate that it could be?
I think the first answer to your question is yes, absolutely, because I used to be one. The second part of your question is, do I think that that has an effect? It likely does. What percentage? I haven't a clue. I will tell you that I do know the numbers are shrinking because, as I said, I just came back from the World Service. And whatever it is that we're doing that's working, we need to start repeating exponentially. But yes, absolutely. And I was one of those snarky, arrogant sponsors when I was first in program. Absolutely.
Even like in, I don't mean to cut you off, I apologize. You know, even like in New York City, when I go to face-to-face meetings, there's a lot of, you know, other races going in, and they're just turned off. You know, I went to intergroup, and it was just like condescending spirit on steroids. And if I was a newcomer, I would not go back to Overeaters Anonymous. As an African American, I just felt so uncomfortable, and I've been in OA for a couple of years, or you know, a few years. So, I just wanted to get your take on that.
Well, first of all, that saddens me greatly because I'm a fellow New Yorker, and I absolutely get really pissed off when New Yorkers act that way. So shame on them. And I'm also a member of OA, and I get really, really upset when fellow OAs act that way. But as I've heard it many times before, I can't change anybody else. I can be the best example of a big book anybody sees. I have to accept what I don't like. And I want to change things. You know, Gandhi said it, be the change you want to see in the world. So model really good behavior. Model the best OA member behavior you've got. I've dealt with prejudice. It's painful and it sucks. And all I could do is just to remain true to myself. It's hard as hell, you know, to go up against the man, to go up against, you know, the establishment. And, you know, OA is like any other organization. We got some great personalities and we got some real bleeps. And it's killing me to use all these bleeps because I am so not a bleeply person. But I'm trying to be good here. But, you know, what does Harlan say? The best thing we can do is to recover, recover, recover. And I don't mean that flippantly. But I mean it like there are meetings here in my local intergroup that are sorry excuses for an OA meeting. So what am I doing about it? I'm sitting on my butt at home. I'm not getting off my ass. I'm not going to those meetings. I'm not being the big book that they may only see one time. So it's what we can do. And remember, like that Just for Today reading, you know, we do what we can when we can. We can't fix it all. But when we see something that's not right, we can do something about it. We are a member. Every member has the same voice. So if something's going on in a meeting that goes against the tradition, it behooves us to speak up. I'm a big tradition person. I'm all about the traditions. And I have gotten a lot of people really pissed off at me when I will say something in a meeting, when I will cut somebody off and say, that's an outside issue. I got slammed for doing it on this phone meeting. I will do it. I will continue to do it. If the moderator, and I won't do it on this line because I've gotten slammed, but if in a face-to-face meeting, if the leader does not address it, I will address it. And I don't care who hates me. But I need my OA meetings to be in existence. And the only way they're going to stay in existence is if I'm doing my part to ensure it continues. And I don't know if that answers your question, Charles, and I'm happy to talk about it offline if you want to. I'm always happy to talk to another New Yorker.
Thanks,
That's
Charles, for your question. Thank you, Maura. Our last question for today for you, Maura, is from Carol Lee D. Carol Lee D, are you still on the line? Star one.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Carol Lee. Your question, please, for Maura.
Yes, Laura. I've listened to the whole meeting, and thank you so much for your share. I guess my question is, I'm a newcomer, you might say. I started OA the first time last June, I guess. And for me, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do, personally, for me. The 12 steps, and I, a little history here, I've done the steps, and right now I'm in relapse, I guess you could call it. I don't know what it's called. But anyway, I'm looking for a new sponsor. But anyway, it's awesome. The 12 steps for me is, I know it's the way my higher power wants me to go. They're awesome. But I have difficulty understanding them. It's almost like they're so simple but yet hard for me. And I just struggle with all this. I don't
have
a problem.
Can you give me an example?
Yes. I don't have a problem being willing in my higher power. But I guess I've done a 4-step. But then I think it's just that I'm still in denial. And I'm trying to get it in my head that it is a disease. For me, I realize that if I keep, I love what you said about when the pain doesn't get greater than the eating. And I guess I'm liking the pain. But I also know my higher power has a freedom for me. I know that for me in my heart and soul. And I want to be free so bad. And I just don't know. I just, if anyone else is struggling out there, it's just, and I don't believe, but for me, anybody's higher power is greater than mine. I think he's universal, or she, or however your higher power is. And no one's better than the other person. I totally believe that. Because if we don't work these steps, we're going to be out in the truth, because I'm a compulsive eater. So I guess what I want to say, was it so hard for you also? It just seems like I struggle so much. If you can just, and it seems like I've listened to a lot of people online, and they have like segments of their recovery. You know, they'll go a while, and then they're gone out there for 2 or 3 years or whatever. It's just that it's such a sneaky, devastating disease. I hate it. I hate it. And thank you for letting me share. I guess it's kind of general. I don't know if you can talk a little bit on it. And yes, some people are very arrogant, I feel like, in the program that, oh, I've got it, and you need to do this. Well, I was in a program before OA, and it was all about the food. Well, I realize now it's not about the food. I realize that. But I still have problems. Okay, thank you for sharing. Thank you.
Carol Lee, I'm going to try to address what you just said, but I'm sure I'm going to miss a couple of pieces, parts. There was a lot in there. One of the first things I heard you say was that you didn't understand. What is it that you don't understand? Can you just pinpoint that one idea for me?
Yes. I think for me, God is just my higher power. This is just too difficult. I mean, he has worked
What's
in my life
difficult?
Before.
What's too difficult?
Why he would take my disease, this disease, but I call it pleasure when you're out there, and make me have to, I want to say, suffer so bad. Not suffer, but be in bondage is, I can't think of another word. But what is so difficult is, you do this every day. You mentioned it. You told what you did. I wrote it down. We in OA have to do this every day. Every day. I've
yes,
heard
ma'am.
It so much. But how
yes,
many people are willing to do this every day? We have a life. Everyone has a life. You know, we have things.
Do you have a life? Wait. There's my entrance right there. You just gave it to me.
Okay.
Carol Lee, do you have a life?
No, because I'm stuck with this stupid
okay.
thing.
Okay. So you just
Thank
answered
you.
Your question. You just answered your question. You don't have a life. I had no life when I was in the food. I had no life when I was in OA and in the food. I had no life when I was in OA and abstinent only. It's a choice. Do you want to stay in that pain, or do you want to grab onto the only thing? No, I'll take that back. Do you want to grab onto something that may very well help you get out of the pain and the feelings of overwhelm? Just
Probably
to
not.
Try it. Just to yes. try it. If you're not in enough pain to try it, then that's your answer.
Oh, I've tried it different times.
Did you
good.
Do it?
Yes, I did.
Did you do it? Okay.
I did.
Were you entirely abstinent?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
because
no,
I'm
no.
thinking.
No. I lied.
There
I lied.
You go. There you go. That's the answer. That's
Thank
the
you,
answer, Carol Lee. We have to be entirely abstinent.
Okay.
Because remember, my disease is in my head, and if my disease, if my head is in disease. How could I possibly go to my head to cure what's wrong with my head?
That's good. Mm-hmm.
I can't. The first thing you have to, first thing I have to do is I have to be entirely abstinent. Like it's been said, this is not a program for people who want it or need it. This is a program for people who do it. And you're right. You don't have a life. You're sitting here and you are lamenting that you don't have that you have a life, and how are you expected to be doing all of this? I have a life too. Well, but you just said you don't have a life.
Yes.
Working this program, first and foremost, has given me a life, I'm sorry to be cliche, beyond my wildest dreams. Beyond my wildest dreams. I could not have dreamed about this life if I was on LSD. It would not have happened. I was going to be a lonely old maid, well, divorcee, sitting alone with 42 cats, you know, or I was going to be homeless and be a bag lady. But there was never going to be joy in my house, in my heart. I experience joy on a fairly regular basis. Now, my life is not perfect. I just started a new business, and I am spending money, and I've not gotten my first client yet. So, you know, that's a 10-step I do every day, you know. But I do this because I know for me it works. And as I told someone else earlier, Carolee, if you do this, you give this a month of absolute thorough honesty. You work with a sponsor who is recovered. You work first to get completely clean. You have that sponsor help you identify all of your alcoholic foods and ingredients. You do that first. You have to have that solid foundation. And then you kick butt. You kick on the afterburners. You kick butt. You do this work. You do this for a month. If you're not seeing any progress, you can leave and you can, I promise you, have your old life back. It's waiting there for you. It's a choice we have to make. It comes down to choices. Because I now have a choice. When I was in my disease, I used to say sugar was my drug of choice. I have since learned, because of this biological mandate, there was no bleeping choice, Carolee. There was none. I was going to pick up. So do it honestly, thoroughly, correctly, with a recovered sponsor for 30 days. What do you got to lose?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carolee, for your question. Thank you, Maura, for your answering of those questions today. And I want to also sincerely tell you thank you for offering so much of your story to us this morning. Knowing how this recovery through the Big Book affects a life is tremendously shown through the example that you shared today. It's just a very touching moment. We will get, hopefully, I know that you will, Maura's contact information after we have concluded the meeting here today, as I mentioned. But let's close this meeting like we always do our meetings with a reading of page 164 of the Big Book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past and give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we tread the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you